This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 184 for Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to do geeky things and talk about geeky things with each other. That got wrong very, very quickly. We talk about all kinds of things, websites, books, apps, movies, television, you know, you name it. Joining me tonight awkwardly is Rocket Vola. Hello.
Wait, am I joining because I'm awkward, or is this an awkward joining of companions on this great quest?
I'm gonna take the full blame for the awkward.
It's like Elrond is like, before me, a fellowship, and then somebody like let loose like a fart, and you're like, oh, way to ruin the whole moment, man.
Yeah. Yep. That's what happens when you've done 184 of these. You get cocky. And instead of reading the intro, you decide to ad lib, or you just flub a word and have to run with it because you really don't feel like editing it in post. Because we say that, but we never go back.
No, you don't.
Never go back. No, the only time I've ever gone back to fix things in post is on Comics Coast to Coast or on this show when there has been an audio quality issue, like when you Skype out or when it just, like there's just something that's loud or whatever. That I will go and fix, because I know as a podcast listener, that's a real pain in the butt to try and deal with on the listening side of things.
Yeah.
But I never go back and edit out the flubs. It's why people like us. It's because we're human and we misread the teleprompter from time to time.
Sometimes we announce the wrong person.
Yeah. I didn't do that. I got your name right. It's all good.
That's all good. True.
What's new, man? How are things over on Biggest Fan?
Good. I just did Jessica Jones with my lovely wife Laura, and that was fun to sort of get into doing that. And it's fun to ask her opinions on old topics from Biggest Fan's back vault. It was fun to talk about that with her because I've seen it twice and she's seen it once, and she loves to call it the fact that I have like a steel trap for like really. At like asinine trivial things like plot points from like the B plot of Jessica Jones or something, but then like you flip it and it's like I don't remember what we're doing on Friday, so I constantly have to check my calendar because it just but it was fun. And she did, it was funny because at the end and the beginning I'm used to doing a ramp up, and she made fun of me because it sounded for a second. And one time I did, I almost said he's Laura Stevenson because I'm so used to saying he's Kyle Ferguson.
Right.
And she thought I was going to say Kyle Ferguson. I was like, well, no, I was actually introducing you as a male instead of a female. And then I put her on her spot by making her have her come up with her own tag goodbye because, you know, it's take it easy and then take care. And that's the two inflections between me and Kyle. Well, I wanted Laura to have one, and so she was having trouble, and then for a blooper reel, I made her say all the things that she can remember from the intros over the years, so it's funny. It's funny to see which ones stick with different people.
Oh, interesting.
So, anyway.
Yeah, that must have been a hoot to podcast with her, though.
Yeah, it was tons of fun. We did, we used one of the blue mics, but it's actually part of a webcam thing, but blue mics are so good. So it just set it and it kind of does a 360 thing, but we're in the living room. So it had a little bit of a, you know, you could tell it was in a bigger room. It's not as dulcet and focused as this voice is coming to you right now. But for what is good, I haven't heard any complaints yet. So, but it's one of those things where you hope like, people aren't complaining because they're also not listening. So
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, it was tons of fun.
And I use a Blue Yeti for everything I do.
The creature? Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Those are hard to find.
Yeah, you gotta feed them. It's a lot, unfortunately.
They eat a lot of food.
But I mean, hey, it solves the homeless problem, right? You know, you just find the sleeping guy at the end of the driveway and say, like, hey, it's dinner. There you go.
Yeah,
just clean up after you're done.
Blue Yeti. Well, blue is super. Oh, okay. Yeah, this is the one I've seen in like everything. I think you have like the super, like definitely the professional one. I think that's the one that, you know, like Chris Hardwick and everybody.
Yeah, I would say that the Yeti is probably what most people use if they're using a USB condenser mic. Mm-hmm. There is an option with a Yeti with an XLR cable so that you could run it into a mixer if you wanted to. I don't have a mixer. I do virtual mixing, so I use Audio Hijack 3, I think is the version. And that's what I use to put a couple of filters down. It reduces some of the noise because even though I have it's a small 8x10, there's lots of stuff on the studio walls. Like I've got shelves and books and paper and things. So there's not a lot of echo in here, but the Yeti itself still is not such a small, pickup funnel that you don't get things like me putting my drink down on the table or my laptop fan, that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. So I have to run a couple of low-pass filters and some low-vibration filters to kind of weed that stuff out. It's been a lot better since I picked up the mic arm. So that gets the Yeti up off the desk, so it's just hovering in kind of space.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that was like $20 off Amazon. It's brilliant. It's not as big as I thought it was going to be, but it's still really cool. And what I liked about them is that in the videos where I did the research, the guy that was saying how much he liked it and how it fit all the different microphones that most podcasters use, he also had it attached to a shelf above his podcasting station, and he hooked it up upside down. So the Yeti, when you're doing a condenser record, doesn't care about left or right. So you can turn it upside down, and the left and right doesn't reverse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he had the mic kind of hanging down in front of him.
Just like true old school.
Like true old school, yeah. But the problem with that for me is that then is in the way of my monitor, and I can't see anything. But what it would be good for would be if you were doing a video game and you wanted the mic just above your head, but out of your view.
Like a boom.
Yeah, if you're doing any streaming, it would be perfect, right? Because you're going to be projecting up. You know, you're looking up at the screen. It's very different for me. I've got a standing desk, so I've got the monitor up just above the mic, and then the mic is literally just right in front of my face. So it's it's a pretty good setup, I have to say. The one thing I wish I had was a little bit better mixing capabilities. When I listen to other podcasts, I feel like these guys have some seriously nice gear going on, and it feels really silent, and I have to do a lot of editing on the other side. It's not a lot of work, but I have to run filters through my stuff to make sure that it's not, I don't know, like it doesn't sound too amateur.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'd like to have a nicer mic. But I mean, those are all pie in the sky things. The people I'm also talking about are professional podcasters. So, you know, when your entire income is coming from podcasting, you can afford to spend, you know, $400 to $600 on a new mic and the mixing board.
Totally the trade.
Yeah. And I'm a tech nerd. So, I mean, I would love to be able to tinker around with something like that, you know, find a decent little mixer, you know, it would allow me to do some really cool stuff, you know, here for the podcast. But also I'm getting into doing some tutorials and some things. I mean, that's something that I've been trying to find the time for recently. Well, you and I were speaking before the show about, you know, how my days have just been vaporizing lately. And a lot of it's just because I've been recording some extra video and trying to prep for some tutorials. And I have to say, you know, being a hobby podcaster and having a nice mic means that those tutorials are going to sound a lot better than, mm-hmm. you know, than just doing it with
YouTube video,
a headset mic or YouTube video, that sort of thing. So whenever I do stuff like that, it's nice to kind of have that capability, which I think is really cool. So the one thing I don't have, which I don't know what my bottleneck is, but I have a Logitech C910, which is my webcam that hovers over my drawing table. It's supposed to get 1080p. It's supposed to have really nice, smooth capabilities. It was recommended by lots of people, including podcasters. It's one of the best webcams out there, like 3-4 years ago. And man, it's choppy and not holding up. And even on a local recording, and I'm not sure why that is. So, it could be that I'm podcasting, you know, on a Mac, like that. I mean, that it could be a software compatibility, because I know a lot of Logitech stuff works really well with PCs.
Mm-hmm.
They're a big gaming peripheral stuff. So anyway, So yeah, I just, it's all these, as I get more in depth with this stuff, the list of gear that I need to replace is just growing.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's like, damn it. I don't have the money to replace all that stuff. And on top of that, the thriftiness of my, I guess just natural state is like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's working fine. You don't need to replace it. You know, like it's perfectly acceptable. No one else cares but you, you know?
Yeah. But you're always the hardest critic of your own stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're always like, yeah, but it could be performing just a little bit better. It's particularly bad whenever you have to replace one thing and then you have to dumb that thing's capabilities down to match everything else. And you're like, God, what a waste of this thing, you know? Mm. It's like, it just stinks. That sort of stuff.
Yeah. So besides podcasting with the missus, what else has been going on?
Not much. Just coming up on my 30th birthday is in April.
Oh, nice.
And so it being a zero, most people are like, what are you going to do? And all my other friends have turned 30. Like, I'm the last of like my tight friends. I mean, I do have a friend that
is Kyle 30. Like,
oh, no, but he turns 29.
They're close. I know Garrett and Kyle are close, but they're not, I know they're not 30 'cause I would have heard about that.
No. Yeah. Kyle's going to be, he's one behind me. So like my wife, I'll briefly be 2 years older than him and then he'll get to 29 probably. Mm-hmm. And then next year he'll turn 30.
Okay.
And Laura, you know, she won't turn 30 this year either. So yeah, but of like, all my groomsmen at my wedding and all the guys I play fantasy football with, like all like everybody is pretty much older. I was like the youngest of the kind of group. And then, you know, the underclassmen that have been friends of mine through college, like they're younger, but yeah, it'll be interesting. I haven't 100% know for sure if I even want to I don't do super big birthday things, but I don't also like for it to be the control of the event to be taken away so that you end up doing something that's pretty much tailored for other people and is involving you. So that's the weird thing about when you're an adult birthday, because when you're a kid, it's like you realize, well, your parents pretty much tailor it for you and you're also probably fairly easygoing. But as you get older and you realize it's not about the gifts or it's about this thing, it's really just about what do I want to do for 5 to 12 hours or whatever that I don't get to normally kind of call the trump card on. And then also you also don't want to do something that's like, everyone goes to Disney World for like a weekend. Well, not everyone has the money to do those things too. So anyway, but it's interesting. It sort of put me, I haven't really had like a crisis about it. I'm not really like super freaked out about it. I mean, it's easy for me to say, given the fact that, you know, I feel comfortable in my paying career and, you know, with Laura and stuff like that. But like, it was fun to sort of be like, well, it is my birthday, gosh darn it. So I'm going to get a new 3DS XL. God, it's so hard to say that. Jesus. the new Nintendo.
I don't know why
one.
They do that to the poor game systems. Just give it a nicer name, right?
Yeah, just a new clean name or so. Anyway, I got one of those because a bunch of my friends have them. And I finally got to that threshold of like, the crap-free games that I get on my phone or my tablet just aren't doing it. I don't like, you know, having to worry about, did I sign in for 28 straight days? Ugh, that's stupid. So I was like, you know, it's finally got through the threshold of like, I think I do want to play like a game. And also sometimes it's nice to be in the same room with Laura. And like if she's watching a TV show or she has to be working on, you know, stuff for her theater company, but we don't want to actively have something on TV, or even if we do, it's more as background. So then it sounds ridiculous, but she'll be on her computer, I'll be on my 3DS, and we'll have the TV on. And it's like the perfect like millennial setup. Like nobody's really interacting with any of the other components, but it's like very okay and very like how it is. So
yeah.
But that's fun. And to get it, I actually sold a whole bunch of old Magic the Gathering cards. So it was like a back-ended, wistful look back at these cards that when I was a kid, I like held in such high regard. And then looking forward to this new piece of technology, which was also still embracing that old childhood because I got the new Pokemon X, which is, yeah, talk about it, like a souped up hot rod. When you're used to like playing, you know, the color versions, but you haven't played any of the ones that have 3D graphics, it's like, what? So it's been interesting. I definitely am very a nostalgic person, but I don't carry a lot of nostalgic junk, if that makes sense. Like, I'll see stuff and I'll be like, oh, I love the feeling that gives me, but I'm not going to keep around the house like a butt ton of stuff. Like, I've actually kind of seeded as much nerd things as I do. I usually purge about 1 to 3 graphic novels or trades a year, just because it's like, well, if you buy 4 a year, that adds up. So every like other year I have to purge ones that I'm like, well, I like this one, but if I'm honest, I'm really just using it as a book on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd rather give it to a friend who wants to read it, and then either they'll keep it or it'll keep passing around and that sort of thing. So it was both fun and economical to sell the things. And really and truly at this point, it's like they're so old and, you know, it's – I kept ones that I have extremely, extremely like emotional value to it. But otherwise, it's just like, well, you know, this card's worth $22. Might as well sell it, because otherwise it's just in a binder. So
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I never got into the collecting cards thing. There was – back when I was in really into comics in high school, there was cards – there was Pogs, there was a couple of other collectible things. It just never kind of bit me. I mean, I still have all my comics. I didn't sell any of the comics, but I have one long box full of comics from when I was a kid. That's it. So bringing that around with me has not been difficult, right? And I have a large storage closet in this apartment, so it's been in there along with a box that I got from my mom when she moved out of her house. It was like, you know, Joel's Toys, and it was like Lego, He-Man, Transformers, all in a box about the size of a small television, and that's it. So that has been sitting on a shelf in the spare room, not the spare room, but in the storage room for ages. But for books, I have a different thing for books. I like having some of the books around that I've read that I've really enjoyed, in that I do like lending them out to friends.
Mm-hmm.
Usually friends I know will give them back, but, you know, I have no problem if someone says, hey, I want to read A Dirty Job, or we're talking about something and I have the perfect recommendation for them, and I say, you need to read this book. And then it's cool the next time I see them, if I can remember to bring it with me and give it to them and say, hey, look, just give it back to me when you're done. Mm-hmm. And that I really like. The other thing is that I like books as decorations. Like, I've got two big bookshelves on either side flanking my main television unit, and they're full. One is all full of DVDs, and then there's books closer to the bottom, and then the other one is just books from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of other things in there, kind of space things out, because all the art books I have are heavy, and I've told the story on the podcast before about the bookshelf giving out and these books kind of spewing all over the place. So I've had to balance out the, you know, there's a little potted plant here, and there's like a little bamboo thing. And then I've got a couple of my empty whiskey bottles up there, just to break up the monotony and also break up the weight of everything. But I have to confess, like, I'm a bit of a book collector, but I haven't read a lot of the art books that I have. Like, I've got, you know, Incredibles, Monsters, Inc. I think I have Brave and Big Hero 6. Now, Big Hero 6, I did get through a lot of it. And it's one thing to sit down and flip through it, you know, for 10 minutes while you're waiting for someone to pick you up. You know, you're going to the movies or whatever. You get some time to kill. But I don't often sit down and read them from cover to cover. And these are expensive books. And you'd think that I would be just poring over them. But I get them and I get excited, and then I just fall into my regular routines and they sit on the coffee table until they go back up on the shelf. And then once they're on the shelf, I keep on forgetting to bring them down. So I have this rule now where I've stacked books in the order of like, you are not allowed to look at this one until you've looked at that one. it's a lot easier with picture books, mind you. Like with, I just got Jake Parker's Drawings 3 in the mail, and that's a little... It's 8x10 for the sake of argument. I don't remember the exact dimensions, but it's about 8x10 landscape. Right. So that's an easy kind of, it's just a collection of his sketches. So it's kind of easy to flip through. It's like flipping through someone's Instagram feed. But it's also nice to unplug and have that. But I can't, even though I don't read these giant art books, can't fathom parting with them.
Yeah.
Like, someone's like, Joel, I'll pay you like $60 for that. No. $100? No. No, yeah. No, no, no. No, it took me a long time to find this one, or it took me, you know, they're expensive in the first place. I mean, like, on top of being in Canada, you know, they're getting shipping and stuff like that. So depending on where I get them, sometimes they can cost me between $50 and $70.
Right.
I've got a beautiful life drawing syllabus that easily cost me 80 or 90 bucks before the Kickstarter was over. But I'm happy for that because it was a combination of, like, it is a beautiful book. It's also, I helped with the Kickstarter, I helped make it. So I, you know, I don't mind paying a little bit extra to kind of be part of the process of making that happen.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I think back in the day when books were about the cost to people as video games, you'd buy one and you'd savor it. The way if you spend $50 on a game, you're probably not going to immediately like, oh, I bought the game. Well, I'll open it and play it at some point. Although, you know, some people do. But yeah. I find that when I get games on sale and they're like, oh, I got a strike right now. All right, it's $3 for this whole game or $7. All right, great. And then it just sits or it just like, and then like eventually I've gone through new games that I bought after it and beaten it. And then I'm just like, yeah. And I get that way with books real bad because it's like the gratification of having bought it is like absolving myself of saying that I own it, but I don't have any of the knowledge within it. But at the same time, I'm like, but I own it. So,
yeah.
So I got to own up to some books. I actually got this one book, House of Leaves, which I'm really excited to read because of all this information I've heard about it. And I got it and I have it. And then, you know, I got the new 3DS. So that's also like an easy to like do in one place. And then, you know, as the weather gets better, I want to be able to sit outside or on like a porch or whatever. But I can also do that with 3DS and it was more expensive. And so it's like, no, you have to remember, Brockett, you got this book. And you're really excited about it the same way. And I do love to read books. And I tell you what, I mean, like, as much as the gratification of, like, finishing a book that really had some heft to it, or at least, like, emotional heft to it, and putting that down, like, it's hard to describe that, I feel like, nowadays. Because with audiobooks, it's you don't get to see the pages go by. You just see the number of hours you have left. But, like, remember when you were a kid and you were, like, thumb, 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 and then finally you're, like, you bent the paperback and now you're barely holding on to anything in your right hand as you read and you're like, oh my God, there's so few pages left. And yeah, so I see that. I think pretty much everybody loves the idea of like bookshelves and stuff. That Beauty and the Beast library, I don't know of a single person who wouldn't love to have that accessory to their house. If they didn't have to clean it and they didn't have to pay property taxes on it, I think they would gladly take
giant
library.
Absolutely. I mean, and I really appreciate books as art objects as well. I mean, like, not everything, but sometimes if you get like a nice hardcover book, I mean, if you take the dust jacket off of it, sometimes they're beautiful. Like just to kind of look at them, right? I would love to eventually have a really nice set of Lord of the Rings in like a hardcover kind of case bound. Something leather wrapped or something like that. And that's something that I have not reread, but I would, that's something I would. Can't say that I would reread Game of Thrones because I did quote unquote read that via audiobook. But I'm trying to remember the last novel I read, the last fiction I read was War Crimes, which is that Warcraft book. And I felt that. Like I remember finishing it and having that sense of accomplishment. And you don't get that when you're listening to an audiobook.
No.
Because the last audiobook that I listened to was The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferris, I think. I can't remember the guy's name, but The 4-Hour Workweek is the name of the book. But I listened to that via audiobook, and that was more like a podcast. Like I didn't, on top of being nonfiction,
right.
You know, like it felt more just informational and kind of the things I do on a regular basis. It didn't really feel like, it didn't have the same sort of like checkmark, you know, as it had when I finished War Crimes. So I've got another paperback book. It's nonfiction, but it should be good. Actually, I shouldn't say paperback. It's hardcover.
Cheapen yourself by saying you have paperbacks.
I'm just trying to remember the name of it and it's awful. It's Felicia Day's autobiography. What the hell's it called? That's driving me nuts now. The chat room is going to correct me in a minute, I'm sure.
It was Tim Ferriss, by the way. I double checked
on it. Oh, cool. You're Never Weird on the Internet. That's the name of it.
Oh,
yeah, I've got a friend that works at a bookstore, and this was really big when it came out in September. I'm sure it's great, and I'm sure it still has a lot of circulation. But I just missed the mark. I had a lot going on, and I got the book right when it came out, but I just neglected to actually read it. I think it just took me longer to get through War Crimes than I anticipated, because I remember liking War Crimes so much, liking the act of sitting and unplugging and reading so much that I bought You're Never Weird on the Internet before I finished War Crimes, thinking like, I want something to just, when this is done, I'm going to put it on the shelf. I'm going to put a different book in my bag so that I just have one.
Yeah.
And I just never rolled over onto it. And lately I've been going to bed at like midnight, and the thought of reading is just like, nope, I'm going to be asleep in 10 minutes.
So, it's true.
So I don't do that at all. I've not been doing a lot of reading on that side of things. But one thing that I've been catching up on this week, though, is Supergirl. And I'm glad that you're on the show, because I wanted to talk to you about this. Have you seen the latest?
I actually have no access to Supergirl
legally.
So of all the things we pay for, CBS is the stingy old person's network that has this young new person show. And no, until like Supergirl's first season comes on Netflix or something, I won't be able to see it. Oh. Which, I mean, like, I do have a friend who through some mysterious means is going to find a way for us to see the Flash Supergirl crossover, because I'm a religious, or, you know, like a devout, both, whatever. I'm a hardcore Flash, Arrow, and even Legends. I keep up on all of those.
Okay.
And so even though I know from tentative, like, you know, the Hollywood Reporter, that there's no plans as of yet that Supergirl is going to cross over to Flash, and probably that means that...
Oh, it's happening.
They are going to have...
already filmed it.
Oh, they got both sides of it now?
Yeah. No, they're doing the Supergirl Flash crossover. That's totally happening.
Oh, yeah. But I thought when I first read the report, it was like Flash appears on Supergirl, but at the time they had no plans for Supergirl to appear on Flash.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Contractually.
I see what you mean. Yeah. No, Flash is appearing on Supergirl, and I think they're using the Earth 2 dimension thing to do that.
Okay.
So,
well, that makes sense. Yeah.
So
yeah,
back
yeah.
in Flash on his Earth, there is no Supergirl.
I think
that's how they're going to roll with that, which is, I mean, it's brilliant, really, when you think about, you know, how kind of tidy that is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as I will say tidy, I use the term loosely. We're talking about like multiple dimensions and multiple Earths. So
yeah.
I feel like there's a certain amount of, you know, leeway you have to give when you're dealing with that kind of stuff. But I'm excited to see it. I just finished this week's episode. There was a week off, and I think the week off, and also the 4 weeks off that Flash is taking, is to kind of line everything up so that when Supergirl and Flash air in their regular schedules, that the crossover lines up properly with whatever they're going to do. Anyway, this latest one, they tackled Red Kryptonite in Falling, which is the name of the episode from this week. Yeah. And I mean, there's no real spoilers. There's nothing to really spoil. It's just, it's a pretty, it's run of the mill as far as, you know, there's no giant, cliffhangers or any big reveals. But what I was really impressed was how they handled the Red Kryptonite. I mean, my only complaints about Supergirl so far have been that it does get a little juvenile sometimes with like the love triangle stuff, and that it also is a bit piggybacky on Superman stuff. Like they've been grabbing, you know, kind of low tier Superman villains. They've been taking stories of Superman right from the cartoons and kind of doing them as Supergirl. It's not super inventive. It's brilliant for everybody that's not, you know, aware of that stuff. But for someone you and I that have watched the cartoons and read the comics, you're like, oh God, I know how this ends. Like, you know, like, and that's it's not fun to watch. But with Red Kryptonite, they set off right away everybody that is a Superman fan knows what it is and knows what it does. So if you don't know, it affects Kryptonians emotionally. So instead of just weakening them and making them sick, it actually turns them into kind of like Jekyll and Hyde. So they become Hyde. And you didn't know that?
Oh, well, I knew how it affected on Smallville, but like if you go to the comic books, the Smallville Kryptonites don't line up either. Like every TV show is like, and there's super wacky ones. I mean, there's all sorts of ones. So, but that's cool though that like Red to me makes sense. So it affects her like emotionally, gets her a little bit more riled up.
Yeah, and the thing is that it doesn't necessarily, like, and it's different than Smallville too. Like Smallville, it made him kind of like a bad boy, mm-hmm. and made him kind of, it was basically all these inhibitions that were just kind of stripped away. And it's similar in how it affects Supergirl, but it's different in that it goes after all of the jealous and selfish thoughts that she's harbored her entire life, and she just lets them out. So, yeah. So, I mean, she has it out with her sister. She has it out with the people at work, her boss. And that's as Kara. And then as Supergirl, she really starts to go off the handle. And it looks as the way that they kind of portray it is that every time she lets go and does something out of character, it then amplifies. And she becomes more and more unhinged and more emotionally just distraught. And what they handled so well about it is that it's a synthetic kryptonite. It was made by this Maxwell Lord guy because he was trying to make kryptonite and he failed. So everybody in this, it's not like it's a Superman trope. The way that they built it into the show is that this is the first time it's ever come into the DC universe, so to speak. Like this is kind of like the reset button. So like Jimmy Olsen doesn't know about red kryptonite, and you think he would, right? Whole show, I kept on waiting for him to go, oh, she's been affected by red kryptonite. I know how to solve that. Like, you were expecting that tight little bow, and mm-hmm. that doesn't happen. And I won't get into how they go about fixing it, but like, it's so well done. And it doesn't end with them just curing her, but they on the other side of everything, Supergirl then back to normal has to deal with the fallout of all of the shit that she's caused. And it's not small bananas. Like they really have her go over the top to the point where she almost kills somebody. And then she is just crushed. And like, I mean, you want to jump through the television and hug her. I mean, the acting in this episode is great, but like what they really pull you in, and it really feels, dangerous. Like when Supergirl's off the hook, you're like, ooh, this is bad. Like this could be really dangerous. And it's such a cool way to handle it. It wasn't tropey at all. It had some nice call out moments too. There's a spot where she's at a bar and she's flicking peanuts and she's busting liquor bottles, which I thought was great. Call out to Superman 3, like just stuff like that. But I was really impressed. And there's still some of the lovey dovey stuff that happens because they can't ignore it because they've been building it up all season. But they use this as kind of like a catalyst so that all this angst that has been building up around this stuff that Hammond and I don't like about the show, they just blew it up. They said, all right, she's going to have red kryptonite and she's just going to tell everybody off or tell everybody how it is or let people know how she feels in any, like, however that is. And it's brilliant. It's a really, really good episode and certainly has brought me around on where I hope the show is going to go.
That's good. Usually, and I mean, like, even I, like, I love, Arrow and Flash's, they both, it took Arrow in its first season for me 6 episodes to really actually feel like, okay, now the writers know, they've written enough of this show to know what they really want to go at. And then Flash, like, had a few freaks of the weeks and stuff, but like Flash has finally gotten to a point where they realize that they can lean heavily on just how wacky and sciency they can be and still have episodes with, like, you know, King Shark and stuff like that, but they're not worried as much about, like, you know, okay, there's just some generic thing. So that's good. It's good to know. Falling shows up as episode 16. Yep. So I imagine they're probably going to do a full 22, I think is standard
that would,
now.
That would be my guess, yeah.
Apparently Fallen's got the highest rating on TV.com, which is pretty much my IMDb for TV.
Wow, nice.
Got a 99.2 out of 10. So apparently it was very well received. It seems like you weren't alone on that one. So.
Yeah, and I think the key to it all is that the title of the episode really kind of shows you it. Like, they tear Supergirl down. Like, they make her human in this emotionally. And it's, because the whole time you're watching these shows, she's like, God, it would be so cool to be, you know, faster than lightning. And it's like, it'd be so cool to be able to fly and punch people across the room and all that kind of stuff. But there's like, this is like, here's a gentle reminder. Nope. When someone can control you and turn you into a weapon, it's like your worst nightmare coming through.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and that kind of stuff was, it just, it really kind of hit home for me. I know what you mean about Flash. Like they've really hit a stride there too. I'm still not a fan of Zoom, but I really like it when he goes after King Shark or Gorilla Grodd. When Gorilla Grodd was on the show, I was like, yeah, like this. Well, just the fact that they can do it on TV and have me believe it is awesome.
But it's amazing.
Yeah, but then secondly, it's just like, this is a comic book show. I mean, there's a talking, mind-bending gorilla fighting a guy that can run really fast. Like, this, you can't make this shit up. You know, like, this is the kind of stuff that I really like. And they've done some alien stuff in Supergirl. They still have yet to really impress me with a decent villain. So I'm hoping they bring in somebody. I'm hoping they bring in like a Justice League villain, like, 'cause that's what she needs. Like, she's Supergirl. Like, she's doing all these incredible things. And they need to bring in something from, like, I mean, Maxwell Lord is a poor Lex Luthor. He's not really that. He's not intimidating. He's not that crazy. But they need like a, maybe not a dark side, but like something that level.
They could get a Granny Goodness. I mean, she always collects women for her harpies.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's a female.
Or the harpies. Sort of kind. Well, yeah, I mean, Barta. And what were the other ones? There was three of them.
Yeah, like Barta was like Escapes. And then it's like really weird names like Lashina, and like there's the ones with like blades and stuff. Let me see if I can just Granny Goodness. But yeah, it I see what you're saying. It sounds to me like you're having the classic argument where people are like, Superman's villains are all boring, and it's like, well, if you can't take Superman's level of bad guys because they're all Superman's bad guys, then what's left for Supergirl?
Yeah.
That's like her own.
Yeah. I'm also, I mean, I am A-okay with the Brainiac stuff that they were getting into. Like that would be okay.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
That's good. Somebody like Brainiac, the Furies, that's what they are. Not Harpies, but Furies.
Right.
And Lashina is one of them. She's the one with whips. Because it makes sense. Mad Harriet, Bertha-dette, Stampa, Bloody Mary. These are all some of the names.
Wow, those are some
Knockout,
odd
Artemis,
names.
Guillotina.
Artemis, I think, is one of the ones that was in the TV show, in the Justice League, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe Justice League Unlimited. They really kind of tapped the pantheon.
Yeah, for no, Justice they go Unlimited. Great.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, though. I think they're probably... Have they had, like, an atomic skull on Supergirl yet?
No, but
okay. I could see them using the atomic skull.
That would kind of work. I mean, like if they had somebody that had superpowers, but were able to like turn them off. So like, I think the challenge that they run into is like, they handle it really well with Hank. If you don't know, I don't want to spoil it for you, but like there's some characters that can turn their powers on and off. So that they don't have to be an alien in makeup or a CG character the entire time. They can be played by a human actor and then reveal their powers or stuff like that when they have an opportunity to do so and it makes sense for the story. So if they had like a villain, like if the Atomic Skull could be on or off, you know, like turn on the energy when he's fighting Supergirl and turn it off and be just an evil, you know, kingpin would be awesome, right? But that's the kind of level that she needs. Like I've been rewatching Daredevil season one, getting ready for season two. And, she needs like a kingpin. She needs somebody that is physically intimidating, but also like really trying to outsmart her as well. Like they have to attack her on all fronts. Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she needs something like that. I'm not sure. And that's where the Brainiac stuff comes in because they've addressed it on the show. And I can't remember the race, but the race of aliens that eventually became Brainiac or created Brainiac.
Oh, it's like Kulo or Kuloians or something.
Yeah, but they're Brainiac, and then she gets
the green
into,
ones.
Yeah, she's blue in this one, but that doesn't because it's Indigo was one of the villains in one of the episodes, but Indigo. She's not an alien. She's like an AI. She's like an artificial being, but she can take physical form. So it's really cool because she you know, jumps out, fights Supergirl, then goes into a cell phone and then, you know, appears somewhere else on the planet. Right. Yeah. And then like, so Supergirl's really kind of like, how the hell do I beat this chick? Right. Like it just is really cool. And she was played by, Vandervoort from who played Kara on Smallville.
Oh, interesting. So yeah. They got another Supergirl to come on.
Yeah, you know, it was fun. Yeah, that's cool. It was really cool. I think it was like Brainiac 8 was bounced around in some of the talk online. Yeah, because you get into, I can't remember what it was called. It's like Booster Gold and
Justice League International?
Maybe that's what it is. But whoever they fight in the future.
Because
I think, doesn't Robin go to the future and then fight with a bunch of other descendants?
Oh, you mean the Legion? Legion of Superheroes?
Maybe that's what it is.
There's a Brainiac that's a good Brainiac.
Maybe that's what I'm getting confused with.
He's a good guy.
Right.
And he only has extreme intelligence. That's literally all he has. And he's kind of like Sherlock Holmes. Like, he's like very hard to get along with, but he's extreme because he's so much smarter than everybody else. But he's good.
Mm.
And yeah, that was always interesting because like Superman goes to the future and he's like wanting to punch Brainiac and people are like, no, it's good. And then he's like, what? You know?
Takes him a while to get used to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
It is Kolu. C-O-L-U is the planet for the Brainiac race.
Right on.
So there you go.
So are you excited for Daredevil season 2?
Tentative excitement. Mostly not because of anything Daredevil is. It's because I don't want it to become the Punisher show, which unfortunately it seems like they're already going to be doing a Punisher spinoff. Which just makes me more frustrated because when they announced these, I love Daredevil and I love Iron Fist. And they were at both ends of the spectrum. And it sounded like it was going to be just 4 years. And then within a 4-year period, I'd have Daredevil and I have Iron Fist. Well, I can't blame it. Daredevil did well. So they have a second season of that coming out. And then Jessica Jones is doing well. So they're definitely going to do one of those. They already knew they were doing Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
And now if Punisher is popular, they're going to do that. Well, I'm like, where the frig is my Iron Fist? Like, I understand they just cast Iron Fist and it was a big deal because they really wanted to get a true like Asian American into the role because of these histories of the white savior complex. It's just, he's a blue-eyed, blonde-haired guy who, you know, basically goes to this ancient Asian culture and, you know, takes up all their mystic mojo and stuff like that. Very Doctor Strange-y. And so I was like really excited. And then in Daredevil season 1, did you finish it? Finish the whole first season of Daredevil?
I watched Daredevil season 1 last year.
Okay.
I was like, ooh, this is going to be great. I'm going to, watch these one night at a time. And I did that for like the first part until the weekend. And then I ended up watching the whole thing. I loved it. So I'm rewatching it. And very seldom do I rewatch a TV series. Like, I won't rewatch movies all the time.
Right.
I've been in a hero kick lately. Like, I rewatched Winter Soldier and I rewatched Age of Ultron. Both of are just such great movies. I think I like the feeling kind of around Captain America an awful lot. I enjoy Chris Evans as an actor, but I really enjoy the writing that they're doing and the feeling. Like, he's currently the Superman on screen that everybody kind of wants.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like that kind of Boy Scout sort of feel.
Mm-hmm.
But with Daredevil, it's more Batman. It's more dark. I just love how visceral it is.
That's the word. Yeah.
And that's what I like about the stuff. And I don't know, because the Punisher is even darker than Daredevil.
Yeah, because he murders people.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Why do you say, here's my great pantheon of superheroes. Oh, there's also this one guy who wears all black. He's ex-military and he uses guns and he murders people. Oh, he's a hero. I don't know. I mean, like,
yeah.
Like, I understand.
Yeah, I guess if the world is ready for Deadpool, then they're ready for the Punisher, but.
Yeah, but at least, it's my whole thing of like, no tights, no fights. Like, don't,
Yeah.
I don't like the deconstructed Superman that they went with and the Superboy where he just wears jeans and a t-shirt. It's like, come on, man. Like, part of the whole message of Superman is the costume because he wants to be a flying billboard for truth and justice. It's like the Punisher is like, okay, I get it. He's got to wear all black, but then he has the skull so people know who he is. But it's like, really? At the end of the day, you're just another guy with a bunch of Uzis that's shooting up things. Like,
yeah.
I don't see the message that you're really portraying. But it'd be interesting. I mean, Punisher is definitely a very dark, Like, if you could argue that Daredevil goes about things very on the razor's edge of what's right and wrong, I mean, like, he has a very clear moral compass, but, like, you watch some of those fights and you're like, man, like, even when I watch, like, live action Batman films, like, I don't feel the bruises that he gets. And I mean, they go to, like, great pains, which I think is important. And what I actually liked about the show is just the sheer amount of times he's out of costume and you just see the work that does on his body.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's just disgusting. The welts and the blood and the cuts. Oh, it's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Because for the first, I don't know, I mean, 90% of the first season, he's not in any kind of gear. He's just in leotards, boots, and boxing gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like practice gloves. They're like, I can't remember exactly what he's got on, but yeah, like he's not in any kind of protective gear until the end. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm really curious to see now in going into season two, where Daredevil actually has a persona, like he's got an image, he's got a symbol that he's kind of pushing out there. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with that, because something like some of the posing and the cinematography from the first season, it's just badass. You know, like yeah. Just because he does have superpowers, like he can sense things and smell things, and just I love the calm moments of like, you know, throwing some guy over the building and someone's like, oh my god, like is he going to be okay? And he just kind of turns his head and you know that he's listening to see if the guy's heart is still beating or if he's still breathing. He's like, yeah, he's going to live. You know, it's like the guy's in a coma and's got like three compound fractures, but it's like, no, he's good. I didn't kill him.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. I think Marvel, like you, to your point about Captain America and Chris Evans, like Chris Evans did like jokey parts. Like when he was announced, it was kind of like the Robert Downey Jr. where like, that guy, really? The guy from Not Another Teen Movie is going to be the representative of everything America? Well, he is, but in like a very, you know, Ryan Reynolds way. But like he vanishes. Like I don't see Not Another Teen Movie Chris Evans. And sure, he's definitely matured. Like you see him in interviews now. And like, but like, I look at Charlie Cox, who I loved in Stardust, and he's done some other small things, but like Marvel just nails people who, even if they're a face or a recognizable person, they like embody it in such a way that's just absolute earnestness. And he like, I love him. I love Matt Murdock just as a character, just the sheer amount of like sadness in his life, and yet he still picks himself up and like keeps going. And oh man, it's brutal. And in the trailers, it can't be a spoiler because it's in the trailers. Like, there's other, not just Punisher, but we're also seeing, you know, like Elektra is being mentioned, and mm-hmm. you know, like this figure from his past, and you know, and they have a history. And then I it looks like it's going to be the Hand, which is like a mysterious kind of kung fu-y organization, which I'm crossing my fingers is how they sort of start to bring up things that can get to Iron Fist. Because Jessica Jones has Luke Cage and has the night nurse, who is Rosario Dawson. She shows up for one episode in Jessica Jones. So they have a brief crossover. But, you know, there wasn't like, oh, ha, ha, ha. You know, they're like waving to each other, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. But like, at least there's like slowly the sinews are starting to like form. But like in my head, I'm like, of all the people, Iron Fist is the one that's going to stand out the strangest. Because if you just Google image Iron Fist.
Which I've done, yeah.
If the costume is anything remotely like that, it is the most glaringly like different. Yeah. Departure, but no. I'm excited. I think, I don't know.
I feel like part of it could work. I mean, like I don't know about the long tassels on the bandana and the belt, but like the symbol on the chest, black and gold, as long as, I mean, you could probably do a little bit more black than gold, but, or I guess black and it's green and gold. So
green and gold. Yeah.
It depends on which image you're looking at. But so what, like, I mean, I don't know. So what is Iron, like, what are his powers?
Well, the interesting thing about Iron Fist is he's one of those characters that is like, well, first off, he's rich. He's basically rich. And then he ends up in this mystic city of Kunlun. And through several events, mostly I think it would be more interesting when people see things have happen. He basically takes on the mantle of Iron Fist, kind of like in one of these, like where the hero is a title and several people have impersonated that person throughout all of history.
Okay, yep.
And so he is the Iron Fist. Danny Rand's the Iron Fist right now. And that grants him the powers of kind of chi. And so he harnesses his chi and can produce a very powerful and sometimes kind of flamey, you know, like super, super punch that he has, which is the Iron Fist. But he's mostly just like a pure kung fu type of person. And in some ways, sometimes he has very low level healing. And also the Iron Fist, like every Iron Fist is slightly different. Some people channel it, you know, using bow staffs, and some people channel it using, like, you know, the rings on the arms. Like, throughout the histories, there's always these different incarnations of the Iron Fist. It could be a woman, it could be a man, you know, it could be all these different things. And so the interesting part about that is, like, you know, it's already a mystical kind of culture that's, you know, removed, and then, like, you throw that into the city, and, like, you know, he has to come. It's, I feel like, well, I'm kind of nervous because a little bit of what Arrow does, where it's like its former playboy now comes back redeemed from, like, a, you know, a journey to a mystical era. Not mystical, but you know what I mean. Like, that sort of thing is, you know, is pretty prototypical for origin stories. But there's something really interesting about Iron Fist, because some of the portrayals of him are, he's more of the type that's like, like, don't like strike a punch as much as like reorient somebody else's punch. And because it's more like violence is the literally like the last option in some ways. So it's really cool. I think sort of Daredevil kind of stole a little bit of Iron Fist's glory, I'm going to say, because his outfit that's really rad with the blind head cap and things, that's exactly how Iron Fist's head wrap is.
Yeah, I'm so seeing that right now. Yeah,
thought that was really cool. It's kind of like, well, it's crap, you know. But yeah, that's really cool. And I think what will make it different for people who might be concerned is the way Daredevil uses his powers and fights is very, and they even bring it up in the first season, like he's almost like very aggressive. Like it's almost like a lack of motion, because he uses vibrations. That's he feels and hears because he can't see. So a lot of times bad guys, like the super villain bad guys, will like use a lack of motion or a overwhelming amount of vibration to kind of orient him. So he's like, he's got a lot of like what his dad is, which is like pure boxer, like brute force. Like he's a like a full force type of thing. Whereas I think Iron Fist is going to be a lot more of maybe a little bit more calmer stuff and maybe like more like flowy. And he's very kick oriented, even though he's called Iron Fist. So whatever. But
yeah, but looking from some of the posing and just fan art and stuff around, I can feel sort of like a very Tai Chi, kind of like people go to punch him and he just kind of hits them twice, but he's not hitting them. He's redirecting them into the wall or into the tree or, you know, into a car or something like that. And there's a lot of evasion and kind of like watching people get thrown into things as they're trying to punch him. Like I can sort of see that going on, but he's got a very iconic look and he appears to be super popular. And I mean, I just never really been kind of in his same wheelhouse. Right?
Yeah. He's just one of those guys that's like, once you, because Daredevil to some people is actually sort of B-level. But like, yeah, he's probably about as fiercely, Iron Fist is probably about as fiercely popular as like, you know, people who love Zatanna. You know, you could find a lot of people who love Zatanna, but generally people are like, what the heck is Zatanna? Like nobody knows who that is. But DC Comics fans know who Zatanna is because, you know, they love Zatanna. Yeah. And yeah,
I think, so, too, there's some popularity to characters that have showed up a lot in cartoons. Iron Fist was in the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon. Yeah.
It was really cool. He kind of looked like a surfer dude area.
Yeah, he looks kind of dumb. I have to say, they went kind of Spider-Man eyes on him, and I don't really like that. I much prefer some of the more comic book versions that I'm looking at on Google Image Search. But yeah, a lot of the time they've got him kind of like Karate Kid with like standing on one leg with the other knee up in the air. Kind of like Chun-Li, Karate Kid poses, that kind of stuff. A lot of flames in the fists, though. There's one that I really like where he's got both fists up in the air, and they're not on fire, but they're glowing, and the white-hot center is the skeleton. Like, you can see his bones.
Oh, nice.
Glowing. Yeah, it's a really neat image. Like that kind of stuff. I mean, they can obviously do it. It's kind of like, I like my Daredevil the way it is, where he's beating the crap out of people and all of his superpowers are communicated through sound and just kind of the way that he tilts his head in the acting. I don't know if I want Marvel TV shows that have like flashy superpowers, like lasers and hand beams and flight. You know, like I feel like, I don't know, there's something about the darkness and the grittiness of the current Netflix Marvel happenings that I like.
You know, I think you'll be okay with Iron Fist.
Yeah. Whereas like on the, like when I want that showy stuff, I go to watch Age of Ultron because like there's some scenes in that are just like, oh my God. Like it's a quadruple page foldout from a comic book that I'm watching in motion on television. Right. Like,
yeah,
some of that stuff is just, it's just wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, it's really cool.
So before the show, you had mentioned that you had gone to see 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, I saw that last night. If you are unfamiliar with Cloverfield, I mean, it was enough of like a internet buzz, but just to rehash, the original Cloverfield was this like hush-hush project, which at the time, I believe J.J. Abrams hadn't become... He was known for Lost, but he wasn't known for Star Trek yet or Star Wars. And, you know, so he was producing this thing that was like very hush hush. Nobody knew what it was. And like it had a great viral online campaign where like you kind of had to like try and find out about what it was because they only barely teased you. And then the movie comes out and it's all from like the perspective of your, you know, it's a video from a handheld like home camera. And, you know, so the guy holding it, you can hear his voice all the time. And he's trying to, you know, it's supposed to be a normal night in the events of these people's lives. And then this horrible thing starts to happen to the city. And you don't know if it's like an attack or if it's like some other like more monstrous type of thing. So that whole thing happens and it's, you know, it's got shaky cam or whatever. And I remember I saw it like a couple of years after the fact and it was interesting. It was good. Like I liked it, but I wasn't like, okay, I'm blown away. Mm-hmm. And then like there was, you know, anytime something blows up and it's sort of like, you know, that sort of, oh, yeah, well, I love this thing. You know, how can we franchise it? Well, people were talking about doing another Cloverfield. And then like, you know, those rumors died down, you know, J.J. Abrams does Star Trek. He does Star Wars. You know, he has Super 8. He has all these other things. Now, like, I guess as... early as only like, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago, there was like a rumor of a movie, and I forget the two titles they used. I think one was called The Cellar, and the other was Valencia. And a random note that people might not know in the movie business, if like a movie's really big, like when Man of Steel filmed in Chicago, it actually was called Rory's First Date. Like that's how it was listed. So when they have to post Rory's First Date's filming in this area, they use fake names for movies because obviously if it's Man of Steel or The Avengers, people are gonna like want to show up in mobs and that kind of can mess things up.
Yeah.
So sometimes just for simple purposes, and also because everyone's got cell phone cameras now, and half the time you'll see online of like people spoiling images from the set. Like, you know, it's hard enough. So. Apparently it had a bunch of other names, and then literally, and I didn't realize this, but I guess it's true, only about 2 months ago they dropped this trailer, and it's called 10 Cloverfield Lane. Well, it actually starts off, and it looks like just this random sort of spooky movie, kind of weird, and then the, like, getcha moment is actually the reveal of the title of the film as 10 Cloverfield Lane, so of course people are like, well, what? There's a Cloverfield movie, nobody knew about this thing, and... it's really interesting. I will say if you haven't seen the trailer, generally it is sort of a bunker story where these people are in a bunker. Mm. And that's pretty much all I actually want to tell you because it's a lot of the interest of it is the lack of information you're getting and then the pieces of information you get. The main character is played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who has been in a bunch of stuff. She was in The Thing, the prequel, sequel, whatever. She was in Sky High. I think she was in one of the Grindhouse films. But she's shown up in... Oh, she was also in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World as the main girl, the one he wants to get with.
Okay. But, yeah.
So she's in it. She's this main character, and then John Goodman's in it, and he's sort of like the heavyweight actor of it. And then there's this other guy, John Gallagher Jr. So friends or fans of The Newsroom on HBO would recognize him, although he's full scruffy beard yokel looking, so it's almost hard to find him behind all the hair. But it's just like the three of them for, you know, this film, and they're like in a little, like, you know, like storm cellar bunker nuclear fallout type of whatever thing. And I mean, there's something about John Goodman that he's like, you know, he's the dad from Roseanne, he's the voice of Sully from Monsters, Inc. But then also you've seen him in movies where he's like not a good person. And and so he does this really great job in the film of being very disarmingly human, like realistic. And also there's like this unsettling element to him. And the whole circumstances are very like, what's going on and stuff like that. And it's filmed like a regular movie, so you don't have to worry about the motion of like a camera or anything. Yeah. It's not like that sort of thing. But yeah, that's pretty much it. You don't know a lot of things going into the film. It's even from the standpoint of like exposition that gets you into something, you kind of just are dropped into this thing and then you kind of go with it. And it's a tight film. It's like an hour, 35 minutes. From going back on it, I don't really, there's a few plot holes, but it's one of those films where it's so tightly wound that you don't really have enough time to like sit back and look at the Rubik's Cube because you're so interested in opening it. So I give it probably about an A-. It's definitely worth seeing. Wow. And I would say that you don't necessarily have to see it on the big screen because I feel like it's more of a thriller and an intimate one because of the confined space.
Yeah.
That it might actually be a really great rental in a dark room. Mm. Or, you know, maybe if you're sitting on a plane or something, but you know, like a confined space is not a bad thing. There's not a lot of like big expense.
Yeah, someone that suffers from claustrophobia when he flies, I am not watching that on a plane.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just going to vote no right now.
Yeah, that might be true. But I am a sucker for single set things. I love stories in which it's literally like you're stuck in one room with the murderer, or, you know, like Chambers plays or whatever, where like, oh, we're all stuck in this house and we'll never leave, and 12 Angry Men and all these things where like the tension is the fact that you can't leave. If you ever think of a situation in which you've been so mad or so scared, like, but you can't leave the one room you're in, just imagine how much that would amp up anything you're feeling.
Yeah.
So I would probably say objectively B+ for the general audience, but it really hits that sort of single set tension that I love. So I give it about A-.
Yeah. I like different stuff like that too. What, I haven't seen Cloverfield, so can I see this without seeing the other?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not related at all.
You could, well, that's the interesting thing. It's one of those things where you could watch it and you could probably sit, like me and my friend Dan and the other two who are with us, we actually kind of discussed whether or not we thought this was actually a sequel or if it was like Cloverfield is just the title for like a Twilight Zone franchise, really. They just invoked the name Cloverfield. There are definitely some things that might be similar, but I will say that there is no point in 10 Cloverfield Lane where you would be like, at least not to my knowledge, I didn't catch anything where I was like, oh, good, I have that knowledge from the first film.
Right, okay.
So you can totally just jump straight into it. In fact, I think if you watch this one and you truly like it, I would almost feel like you shouldn't go back and watch the first one because the first one is so dramatically and thematically different than this one, which is really
I heard the first one just was not, you don't get the payoff that you want.
I would say it's interesting. I would say it depends on what the payoff you're looking for. If the whole time you're not able to see this monster or figure out the circumstances, and then all you're looking for is the answer, if you're like looking for that M. Night Shyamalan twist that's going to like blow your mind, no, don't see Cloverfield.
Okay.
But to me, I think the interesting part was that more the circumstances that were allowed by the way it was filmed with the handy cam and how much that would actually work. Because I swore there'd be times where, like, you spend so much money on an action film. Just imagine how infuriating it'd be as the director to look at a script and be like, I have how many explosions, but I can only barely see them because I'm going to have to shake this camera because the guy's running. This is kind of infuriating. But like, that's how it is. And that's what's interesting, I think, more in the way that one's shot and built. I mean, the characters are who you'd think. They're sort of the jokey best friend. There's the love interest. There's the sort of heroic dude. There's cannon fodder, you know, that sort of crap. So it's not breaking the mold, but what it did was it took a story that's pretty tried and true and then decided that you're going to look at it through a fisheye lens and you can't change that lens, which in itself is, you know, is an interesting thing. I guess the monster itself is not a true, like, oh my God, like, this is going to haunt my dreams for an eternity. In fact, I barely kind of remember what it looks like, but like, I would say overall, like, I'm like infuriated or anything. Mm. You know, it was good. I might watch it again, but it's definitely one of those films where, you know, it's a really great experience. Like, certain films you watch and it's such a great experience that you're almost like, I don't know if I can watch it again because I don't know if it'll ever feel the same way. Gravity on the IMAX. Like, I can't master that sort of technology to watch Gravity the way I did, but I love Gravity, but it's a movie I might never watch again.
Yeah. It's kind of like me with Ex Machina. Like, I really liked it, and I might watch it again, but the way that flows is just so, so important that you don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So once you do, I don't know what that would feel like.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. I need to see it. It won
you do.
Oscar for
you do.
I heard it was really excellent.
Oh no, you just, if you judging what you said about 10 Cloverfield Lane, you will love Ex Machina.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by Tweaked Audio. You can go to tweakedaudio.com for high performance noise reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout and get 30% off your entire order and free shipping. So that's tweakedaudio.com. And the code is TCC. And I have something that you can listen to on your new earbuds. And that is, Craig Lang has a new EP out. It's called Eclipse. Craig is a friend of mine. I happen to work with him on the cover art and the graphic design for the album. But he is the one behind all of the music. And it's really, really cool stuff. I'm not sure how you, just singer-songwriter. He's a very talented guy. He's a composer. He went to school for this stuff, but he's also really good at singing and playing guitar. And he does a lot of the work on this album. Like, he's done a lot of work. And even just talking with him about, like, I was helping him with the cover art as he was wrapping up mixing and printing and the final, you know, composition for everything and what he was going through there. You can tell, you know, from our text chats and our email chats and some of our in-person conversations, that he's got his whole heart and soul in this. You can go to craiglang.ca, and check out a sample. You can listen to some samples on iTunes, if you look for Eclipse, or you can just go to, ellipsisproductions.ca. He changed it recently. And you can buy a copy, either, a physical copy or a digital copy directly from Craig. So wherever you live, there's a way to get it. Craiglang.ca would be kind of like your springboard to like Facebook and YouTube and all the different places where you can find him. But absolutely check it out. He's an independent artist, so worth supporting. The EP on iTunes is only $4.95. So, I mean, for, you know, half a dozen songs and some good stuff, then check it out. And you can listen and try it out and see, you know, if it's something that you might like first, which I think is always really cool. So that's craiglang.ca. The album is called Eclipse. Well, that's it for me, man. Did you have anything that you wanted to poke in?
No, I'm finally working my way through the audiobook of The Magician. So hopefully at some point we can tie a bow on what you've seen of the TV show and what I've seen of the, or listened to of the book. I will say this. I am even more interested to see what they do for the TV show, because from the book standpoint, I will say that it's pretty meandery, and I haven't had a clue as to what the primary conflict of the entire book is.
No.
So it's,
I think they might move faster than the TV show, because I just watched the latest episode over dinner tonight before the show. I will say nothing other than that it got dark, and I mean, like, Daredevil villain dark.
Oh, is what,
yeah. Oof. I was not expecting it to go there. So yeah, I keep on reading. I'm curious to where you're going to end up to.
Yeah, cool.
Well, we record this show live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. You can find the mobile audio stream at alphageekradio.com. The music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. If you'd like to share the show around or at least get some new eyeballs or ear holes on it, go to iTunes and leave us a review. Currently don't have any new ones, so I will read a new review if you go make one right here on the show. And on the other side of things, if you want to find a way that you can support the show directly, go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. You can become a patron. You can just share the Patreon page on Twitter or Facebook, wherever you want. If you wanted to join in, then one of the rewards is hanging out in the Slack chat. And I have to give a shout out to Alistair McFly. He's in the chat room right now. He's always in the Slack chat. There's just some really cool stuff happening in there throughout the week. I think last night we were talking about 80s cartoons and our favorite intros, and we talked about Thundercats and He-Man and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and how they were different because he grew up in Britain, so they were called Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, and the song was different. Like, all kind of nerdy nostalgia happening in the Citadel Cafe Slack. So check out patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and thanks very much, Alistair, for your work and your support in the Slack chat. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. Moments before the show tonight, I posted a new comic on starcrossedonline.com, and I'm recording a new podcast next week on Comics Coast to Coast. I think Jay Myers is going to be our guest. So there's lots of stuff happening in my world. Twitter is probably the best way to kind of keep in touch. It's at Joel Duggan. Brockett, where can people follow your work online?
Well, you can find Biggest Fan Podcast. You can also find that on Facebook and join that group. Just talk about different general pop culture topics. Just recently did a Jessica Jones. So if you're intrigued by that, if you've finished Daredevil or you're going to come to Jessica Jones afterwards or whatever, you know, it's an easy thing to do because it's all up there. It's really good. So really, really good. Yeah, you can just check that out.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.